Hey Mahesh, are you okay?
Hey Dean, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly fine, yeah.
Okay, beautifully, beautiful. This is the first time I'm actually using my mic.
Like a pro. Many people struggle to come on, but like a pro, man.
Good. Hold on, I'm switching. Just trying to. Okay, yeah. When I put the things in, the volume went down.
Yeah.
So, how much of me is, well, I guess I
Oh,
need to be a little closer.
I can see you perfectly.
Okay,
I think
you see the top of my head too?
yes, everyone can see you
Yeah.
perfectly.
Okay, good.
Okay, so firstly, thank you for coming on the platform. Really excited to ask the questions that the community have for you. But if people don't know about everything that you do, the work that you do, and why you got into it, are you able to just give a brief explanation about yourself?
Sure, I'm Mahesh Grossman. I'm a somatic hypnotherapist. I specialize in anxiety, trauma, and depression. I got into this, well, partly I didn't know that I had anxiety. I had severe procrastination, which is freeze mode
Yeah.
in anxiety. And so you never actually get anxious when you keep avoiding what makes you anxious. You just don't get anything done. So I didn't know, and I was reading this book by another hypnotherapist, actually, and I was like, I thought I was reading it for clients, but when I read it, I was like, oh my God, that's for me. That's what I'm going through.
Right.
And so, I think a lot of people just don't really understand that if you avoid whatever makes you anxious, then your anxiety is going to get worse. You're never, well, you'll never actually live the life you want to lead. But you know, and I also have a ton of trauma. And I've developed, so I have this book, The 1 Minute Anxiety Solution,
Yeah.
with 57 ways to lower anxiety really fast. And they're from five different modalities. So they're some of them are hypnosis kind of things, some of them are physical things, some of them are back and forth movements, some of them are wordplay, and some of them are very physical. So you get
What I like about the book is that it's really hands-on, and you can really, like you said, there's 57 different tips that you can really use in the moment when you're feeling anxious.
Right, and you don't have to go through all of them at the same time. You look at a couple, you see which ones work best for you. Somebody who bought it just wrote to me that he loved it because he hates breathing techniques.
Right.
They don't work for him. And almost everybody who does anxiety stuff talks about breathing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not for everybody. So you know, there'll be some you don't like and some you do like. So that's kind of the purpose of the book. Plus, it comes with like a one quick win over anxiety challenge where you pick something that makes you anxious, and by the end of the 5 days, you actually do it.
Oh, fantastic. So it's like
Yeah.
exposure therapy, sort of, yeah.
Yes. But it's a step-by-step process. See, the thing about anxiety is you don't have to be not anxious. You just have to lower your anxiety enough to keep going at what you're doing.
100.
So for me, the part of why I got into it was that part of it is, I've been doing inner work for 37 years, and I've gone through a lot of iterations of things like that. And I'm happy to say the things I bring to the world at this point are way better than what I started with. I used to, like, it's very important to be able to feel what you're feeling and to work on releasing it. But I used to like scream and pound or do ugly crying as a way of releasing. I'd have laryngitis every time I did therapy for years, like 6 months at a time. I would do it like not every all year, but like 4 months here, 6 months here. And the way I've learned using to combine hypnosis and the sensations in the body to, well, not hypnosis, because hypnosis makes it strange, but if you visualize something that you connect to your body, let's say a fire hose pulling the tension out of your body, you don't get, that's really easy to do when you find peace super easily. And all your feelings want from you are their day in the sun. They don't need to, you don't need to scream and pound to release them. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. I will scream in the car every 3 or 4 months from something that's showing up. But only for a couple, not enough to get laryngitis as opposed to my therapy sessions. But people are so afraid of their feelings. But if you block off your feelings, you know how when a hose gets kind of a kink in it, and no water comes out. That's what you're doing to your personal power, especially with anger. People do that really a lot with anger.
And then it the pressure builds up like it would in the horse.
Yes, yes. And also no water comes out.
Yeah.
So if you can allow yourself to feel what's going on, then your power comes back. It greatly increases your ability to just function super well. And the thing is, most anxiety has some kind of root cause. People say it's trauma. It's not necessarily trauma. It's more like a wound. So I had a client who had social anxiety, and we got to the root cause of her social anxiety. And it wasn't like she was, beaten or other things. She was in first grade. Uh-huh. They had this project where they made cutouts. They did pictures of themselves as angels, and then they did cutouts. And the teacher put all the cutouts on the wall, and this boy saw her cutout, and she didn't cut it as smoothly, I guess, as she could have. And the boy said, "Oh my God, Maria has a penis." And everybody started chanting, "Maria has a penis, Maria has a penis." And that was the key thing to her social anxiety, which is not a really, capital T trauma, but it was humiliating for a first grader. And nobody did anything about it to comfort her. Oh. And that was keeping her from going to Chamber of Commerce meetings and things like that for her business.
No, that's really interesting to see. And regarding the somatic hypnosis, which you're doing now, for people who don't realize or don't understand what somatic hypnosis is, are you able to give a brief explanation about that?
Oh, for sure. First off, I want to say that most people are extremely hypnotizable. Hypnosis is not a strange thing at all. Mm. Hypnosis, if you ever read a book, and first off, if you ever read a book or watched a movie and you felt sad when people got sad, bad things happened, and happy when good things happened, none of this is real. You're concentrating and you're feeling these things that aren't even real. That's hypnosis. That's what it is. Hypnosis is a state of imagination and concentration. Or if you ever got so lost in your thoughts, you either missed your exit or you're playing a video game, you don't hear somebody calling your name. That's hypnosis too. So this is a normal state. What I talk about in terms of somatic hypnotherapy is most hypnotherapists will talk to you and tell you to picture a beautiful place and right. as the starting point and go down 10 stairs. My starting point is your body for two reasons. Number one, I feel like it completely connects you to your subconscious mind when you're in touch with where you have tension in your body. Number two, I'm an empath, which means I feel what's going on in other people's bodies. So when I'm working with someone, this field forms between us, and they pick up on my comfort going to the places that I'm 37 years in of working on myself. I go to, as far as you can go, pretty much,
right.
with inner work and trauma and stuff like that. And so they pick up on that, but I pick up on their body. So first off, it gives me a clue. But secondly, it's kind of the main way I work, and it works pretty well with most people. If it doesn't work, I have alternative ways to work with them. But generally, about 90% of the time, what I'm doing is saying, hey, notice, let's say you're working on something that makes you anxious. I'll have you think about the last time you got anxious from this. And then I'll say, notice where you feel that in your body. And let's say it's in your midriff, in your solar plexus. Then I'd say, just ask yourself, how old were you the first time you had this feeling? Was it 10 or over or 9 or under? And then we'll keep splitting the difference. Mm-hmm. And you'll come to an age or a rough age. It doesn't have to be exact. It could be middle school or whatever you call it there. we just guess the middle grade of this is a 3-year thing in the United States. And then I'll ask you, where were you? Were you at home or school? If you were at school, were you in a classroom, in the lunchroom, in the playground? Who were you with and what was happening? And then we can start to work with what it is that happened. Now, I teach this whole process in my Defy Trauma course, and I also work this way one-on-one with people. But what usually happens is I have a few sentences people can say. They're all the same sentence, but slight variation. So one is blank, you really hurt me when you blank. Mom, you really hurt me when you criticize me all the time. I don't know if I can curse, but I use the F word for this because it invokes anger. F you, dad, you don't get to criticize me all the time. And then what happens, what's really fascinating about this process is we carry these internalized parents or bullies or whoever it is that hurt us. They're inside us from that age, behaving the way they were at that age. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, I love you, you're a great kid, this never should have happened, I never should have done that. If mom criticized you all the time, mom will defend herself. And she'll say, well, I only wanted what was best for you, or that's how my mom raised me, or, you know, 100 other different things. And this is only happening inside you. It doesn't happen inside anyone else.
Yeah.
So we work with that to get you mom, or sometimes we'll use an understudy if mom is too difficult to work with, like a celebrity or someone you know and love, to finally get to the point where they say, I love you, you're a great kid, I never should have done that, and I'm really sorry. And that's you becoming unconditionally loving toward yourself, which is really amazing. And because that's, you're afraid to feel. When we get anxious, a lot of times it's because the situation resembles, our brain makes very sloppy pattern matches. So there's some, in some sloppy way, the things that make us anxious are something that happened in the past that still leaves us full of terror.
And why you say the brain definitely does make, it almost fills in the gaps, doesn't it? Our memories are terrible. A lot of people don't actually realize that we're terrible at remembering things, but we're fantastic at creating our own stories.
And exactly. It's the
you live by, isn't it, that cause, like you say, they create anxiety can really send us down a pathway. I've got some questions from the community that I'd love to get into. The first question is, how do I know it's really trauma? Is there a way of identifying that I'm having trouble with trauma?
Well, it's more than likely some kind of core wound, right? Because we there's stuff there. There's usually stuff under the surface. So trauma is a loaded word.
Yeah.
As I said, with the young woman who, in first grade was made fun of by everybody in the class, I don't know if you call that a capital T trauma. That's not sexual abuse or physical abuse or neglect or, you know, all the things that are adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. But that counts, right? That is, there's a part of you that's afraid of those kinds of things. So the way to tell the difference is really the process. The way to get to the core wound is a really specific process. And I give it away for free. So if you go to my link in my bio or anxiety123.com. I tried to make it as easy as 123 to remember, so it's anxiety123.com.
Yeah.
You will, there's an emotional overload first aid kit, and it gives you the process pretty much that I just told you about. Also, it has a visualization version, so you don't have to, if you're not in touch with your body, you can ask, you know, I do a thing where you're in a library and behind the bookshelf is you at the age where whatever's bothering you bothers you. It comes out, that age. You imagine the library, you're sitting in the chair, behind the bookshelf, you're going to ask someone to come out that's a part of you, that's a different, the age where whatever this pain is from. And people come, and it works. I just developed this 2 months ago for a client, and I've used it for about 6 people now. And it's worked every time. It's really fun when you, after years of doing the same thing, that something new shows up to do.
Would you say visualization is key in a lot of the work that you're doing with clients?
It's a combination of visualization and noticing what's happening in your body.
Right.
So the visualization happens after you discover. It's like your subconscious mind will give you information, and sometimes it's surprising information. sometimes people find out the secrets that were kept from them in their life. And sometimes I had one woman who bought my Defy Trauma course in New Zealand, who she was given up for adoption. Her birth grandmother wanted her teenage daughter to have an abortion and was terrible to the teenage daughter. And somehow, sometimes we have like an imaginary ally come in. This imaginary person came in and told her that the grandmother had lost a child at 6 months, when the child was 6 months old. And this woman said, you know, this is crazy. But she looked it up and she discovered that it was actually true.
Right.
So weird things happen, but I'm trying to think of a good one, but I had a guy who knew why his mother stayed with his father, even though they both knew his father was mentally ill. Okay, just secrets get revealed. And our subconscious mind just knows things we don't even know we know.
That's really interesting. That's something I've never heard of. So that, I think that's to experience that firsthand, I imagine it was, very insightful on your end anyway as well.
Well, I get people into the state. Mm-hmm. And then they get the information they get. And there's a psychic element on my side too, but it's probably not as specific as stuff like that. So one day I was working with a woman and who had taken in some really negative things that weren't true from her lover. And I said, just spit them out like poison apples, like in Sleeping Beauty. In fact, spit them out like a pitching machine. And I'm thinking to myself, why did I talk about a pitching machine? Most women may not have any experience with a pitching machine. Mm-hmm. She did. Turns out she was a softball coach. She knew more about pitching machines than I did.
Wow.
Or cricket coach.
And the next question I have is, can someone experience severe trauma or several traumatic experience and it not affect their mental health?
Well, Bessel van der Kolk, the neuroscientist, psychiatrist, and the best-selling author of The Body Keeps the Score, says it's not what happened to you. Mm-hmm. It's what happened afterwards. So, because we blame ourselves for trauma. So if you had someone you could talk to who was loving and took care of you, the event itself will disappear. It won't, I mean, you'll remember it, but it won't mean the same things. It means if you're, you know, let's say you're sexually abused and you're told never to tell anyone, and or you're blamed for it, or, you know, in your culture, it's not a good thing on your end because somebody did something horrible to you, that's going to still affect you. I have a funny story about Cher and Meryl Streep, who saved a woman's life. They went out for ice cream and they heard this woman screaming and they went towards her. They decided to run towards her. And the guy who was beating her up and tearing her clothes just ran in between them and split them up. And they're kind of trying to pat the clothes and put her together a little bit so she can not look terrible as she's walking home or to the hospital or whatever she was going to. And she suddenly says, oh my God, you know, I'm a singing waitress at a club, whatever, at a restaurant, actually. And all my friends are going to be so jealous that Sharon and Meryl Streep saved my life. Uh-huh. You don't sound particularly traumatized when you're saying something like that, because there was all this love and comfort and you know. And the Greek gods came down and rescued you, too. I mean, celebrities help, too. But, you know, if you're 6 years old, just mommy and daddy are enough. Or a teacher, sometimes, to take away the pain of it. So there are people who don't, you know, had bad things happen and they don't necessarily experience it as long-term pain.
What's the reason that you said that with trauma, a lot of people blame themselves? Where do you think that comes from? What's the reason behind that?
We're children. We blame ourselves for everything.
Right.
Right. Everything's our fault. We think we have control. It's just a normal childhood kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's like innate, built in us?
Yeah, it's just part, it's kind of, it's developmental. Mm-hmm. Heck, you know, a lot of grown-ups blame themselves for everything too.
I think it, with anxiety, you know, we have this inner critic that always tells us we're always going to be anxious, that we're not going to overcome an anxiety disorder, that even when you're anxious, that this time it's not anxiety, maybe it's
Right.
something more. So I definitely agree with you with the inner critic and the blame. I can definitely see that. And the next question is, I opened up to my parents that the trauma of them splitting up is really affecting me. They told me to grow up, so they really disregarded them on this. Do you have any advice on when you obviously open up to someone about something that's really hurt you and they obviously dismiss you?
Well, I don't have advice about that per se, but you know, you do what you can and then don't worry about it, because here's what's really important. Not the external people who hurt you or the things that hurt you externally, it's internally. So there's two things about that situation. Number one, you can talk to them internally, and you want to heal the internal mother and father that you're carrying around with you, because you're not with your mom. And well, I mean, unless it's someone young who still lives at home.
So when you describe the internal mother and father, this is like your inner thoughts of what you think and perceive them to be within the mind. Is that correct?
Yes, you can imagine them.
Right.
So when I go back in time with people and something happened, you actually say to mom, "Mom, you really hurt me when you criticize me all the time," or whatever it is. And mom will answer spontaneously with something defensive. It always happens. It never doesn't happen. I mean, thousands of times I've had this happen in sessions. And that's your internal mom. So you can talk to the parents of that age, but if their divorce hurt you so much, I would bet $100 that there's some older abandonment, some core wound that's being amplified by their divorce. There's this fear of abandonment, this sense of not being loved, all these things. And generally, that goes back to something younger. And if you can heal the younger part, the rest of it doesn't feel as bad.
Really interesting. The next question is, every time I speak in groups of people, I get this horrible feeling that everyone is judging me. This makes me anxious and makes me forget my words. Do you have any advice on this? So do you have any advice from the 57 tips?
Well, yeah,
What?
I have two of them I thought I'd share. But first, you know, I work with this stuff all the time, and there's always a core wound underneath it. I've worked with several people just this year who had, you know, speaking in public phobias, and they each had very different stories. And if you can get to the original wound, again, just my freebie will give you some sense of that. If you go to anxiety123.com or the link in my bio, and do the emotional overload first aid kit, that will give you a system to really find out any core wound. And the Defy Trauma course lets you heal it in a much deeper way. But even that first freebie. So two techniques I'll talk to you about. One is kind of when you're dealing with worry and overthinking, and self-criticism is a good one for this. I just want you to imagine a zipper right here on your forehead, above your eyebrows, in case you're listening instead of watching. And you're just going to unzip it. And at the edge of that kind of zipper part is a white slip of white paper, like at the cash register at the supermarket, you know, the roll of whatever. And then you just start pulling that out. And you can try it with me now if you want to take a few seconds here. And just try it. And you just start pulling that. And pulling that, and pulling that, until it's all out, and you can squash it, you know, crush it up and toss it into the sun. So that's one technique. And the reason these techniques work, by the way, is because they're working with a different part of your mind. And so the anxieties comes from what I call the cave brain, which is really not just the amygdala, which means almonds, so it's not that great a name. but it's Greek for almonds, and it's really hard to learn at first. At least it was for me. And, but it's also, it turns out, like lately they've discovered that there, it's a system. It's not just the amygdala, it's several different parts of the brain. When you use the more modern parts of the brain, the neocortex, some of the other parts, at the moment I forget what the imaginative part of the brain is, but that sends a signal to the cave brain or the amygdala that you are safe. You don't have to run away from the woolly mammoth. See, when you're not safe, you get really dumb on purpose. Because if you have more than two choice, you know, maybe three, fight, flight, or freeze, you're going to miss out. You're going to be dinner, basically, because you're thinking too much. So you have to limit the options. So you have to be kind of a little bit stupider, which is smart. So when you use these other sections of the brain, they automatically tell the amygdala and the cave brain that you're or the cave brain that you're safe. And that's why this stuff works. So that's one. And the other is, this will be fun. This is going to actually help you measure how much anxiety you have. You're going to just notice where you feel it in the body. You're going to unzip your body and you're going to see beer barrels, a whole bunch of beer barrels. And you'll actually have a number. Most people can actually count how many beer barrels they have. Unlike any of the other processes I do, this is one where you like, you can actually tell. And then you're going to take each beer barrel out and you're going to open it however it makes sense that beer barrels open for you, mine open in the middle, which is probably not realistic at all. And then you pour them out. And as you pour them out, you're pouring out the tension. And eventually, and you can toss all the barrels into a fire or something after you're done with each one. And you will feel much calmer.
That's right. Yeah, like you say, it's almost like a pressure release on the tension, which is amazing. I just saw some questions popping up that I just wanted to bring to your attention. So someone said that they have anxiety in one place, although I don't know, maybe they're dealing with, say, twitches because of anxiety, but then the next time they deal with maybe headaches. What's the reason that they're having these different types of anxiety, that it's not always the same symptoms?
I don't know that answer, right. But I can tell you that for the last few months, I've had all kinds of little trauma things, all kinds of physical symptoms, and they just kept coming. Right. And it started off with knee pain, and then it became Achilles tendon pain, and then I got sick. And I knew that I'm working on something really profound, but when something changes, it's clearly related to anxiety or trauma. So I think the key thing is if you can find the core wound underneath whatever it is that's causing you to be anxious in the first place, then all of the stuff will go away. And it doesn't, you know, I mean, when you work with core wounds, sometimes, I have really profound results every time I work with someone, but there's some things, you know, you're going to have some of the longer, scarier stuff that, you know, things go in order. When I work with people, you start with the easiest thing and the next easiest thing, you know, and every time we work together, generally, it just goes deeper and deeper. And so after 37 years of my own work, the stuff I'm working on is sometimes takes a little while to get rid of, or sometimes needs a physical kind of thing. So normally not actually, but this has been a weird little time, but I kind of have a sense of what it's about, and it's something that's plagued me my entire life. So I'm kind of happy that I don't mind that all these things are happening to me.
I just saw another one, which I thought was interesting just to highlight, which was they feel like they were manipulated by their mother while they were growing up. Does this mean that they're more susceptible to being manipulated by other people because almost they were used to this while growing up?
Well, yeah, probably. I mean, probably you want, what you want to do is get loved by your mother. Mm-hmm. And so being manipulated is kind of a distorted but way of either loving, or you want to correct, you know, feeling loved, or you want to correct it. So you may, you know, your nature may put you in situations that give you the opportunity to eventually you're going to want to say stop, and you're going to want to do whatever work it takes to separate your energy from your other. Here's an exercise that really, I think, is really essential. We take in, it's for two things, okay? For on one level, if we take in energy from someone that's negative, this works really well. And a manipulative mother, you obviously are. But the other thing is most people's parents, most people have taken in the unhealed trauma from their parents. There's something called epigenetic psychology. You actually can take it in from grandparents as well through the sperm and the egg. And sometimes even...
A book on it. I forgot the name of the author.
It didn't start with you. It's Mark Wolin.
Yeah.
It didn't start with you. So he talks about it. I have a very different way of working with it. I'm going to share that technique right now. The other thing is, though, through osmosis, by being around your parents and sometimes siblings, you take in their stuff.
Yes.
And sometimes even, you know, romantic partners as an adult. So, I mean, I had one client who had anger management issues, and we discovered that he had taken in his, when he was 3 years old, his father would get in his grill and yell at him really hard. And we found out that the anger wasn't his anger, it was his father's anger. Right. And so we did this technique and the anger was gone. So here's the technique. You're going to imagine, in this case, your mother, but whoever it is, and everybody can do it with their mother or their father or whoever raised them or whatever it is. Uh-huh. And you just imagine a bright red magnet with the silver tips, giant, that they can hold. And this magnet is going to pull something out of you. And what it is, it may be visual, it may be more of an energy kind of thing, or it may just be a knowing, but the visual stuff is often like magnetic filings or sludge or crap. One woman had a really critical mother and she had daggers coming out of the magnet. But the mother or whoever it is that's holding it, this stuff is going to come onto the magnet. And if it's visual, then if it gets too full, you can just kind of toss the magnet into the sun and a new one will magically appear. If it's not visual, you probably can just have them keep the same magnet. So you're just keep doing it until it feels done. And you can do this. I often do this with people with their parents and all four grandparents. Even when they didn't know the person, there's still the epigenetic factor. It may still be in the genes, and often sometimes siblings and people like that. And it's really powerful. But with a manipulative mother, this is something I would actually do. I go into real detail with this and a lot of other processes for, you know, people who've had painful backgrounds in my Defy Trauma course. Again, at the anxiety123.com or, you know, the link in my bio.
Fantastic. No, I think that's wonderful. And after we've done this, I'll make sure we obviously get a link over to your profile so everyone can go and support and follow all the amazing stuff that you're doing. And like you said, there's so thousands of testimonials because you've done it for so long. And with that time becomes experience, like you say, not only from the clients, but from your own personal experience and your own journey. The last question I just wanted to ask, because these were the ones that came in, was, is cold water therapy good for anxiety? So it's a little bit of a curveball from what we've been discussing, but hey, what's your take on cold water therapy?
Well, I had to look that up.
Okay.
But it does lower your blood pressure. Mm-hmm. It may lower your heart rate. And of course, you know, you can't ruminate and while you're taking a cold shower. You can't have, you're too busy, you know, whatever. I don't know. I did it for a while at a certain point in my life, but I don't remember what it's like because I like my hot showers back again.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I've seen Nicole LaPera, the holistic psychologist, recommend like ice water, sticking your face in ice water if you're anxious. And, you know, God bless anyone who wants to do that. I have 57 other ways that you can keep your clothing on for and that work, and that you can, you don't have to stick your face in ice water, which sounds horrifying to me. So, you know, I would try anything. If nothing else works, that would be my last resort. Right. If that's your nature and you like it, go for it. Anything that I'm of the thing is that it doesn't take studies. Mm-hmm. It takes testing for yourself. Does this work for me? Does it not work for me? And if it's a placebo effect, placebo effects are just as real as anything else. Yeah. Hypnosis is all, you know, you're all imagination.
I completely. I remember when I was going through an anxiety disorder at the start of it, I saw a counselor when my dad passed away, but then I saw this, well, the counselor did EFT tapping. And again, I don't know if it was placebo, but in the moment at the time, it was reducing the anxiety. And I think that's a really important message to share, that we don't care if it's placebo. If it's reducing the anxiety, then it's doing the job.
Well, there are acupressure points that EFT works with. Yeah, I have a technique. This has gotten over 500,000 views between the times I've posted it, mm-hmm. on both the other platform that's well known and this one. And it's very simple. You just put your finger on your eye ridge and you make a letter C, mm-hmm. from this side. And then you do it back and forth a few times, very gently. And it's extremely calming. I have so many people, and it doesn't work for everybody. I have people saying, this doesn't work. And I have other people saying, thank you, this helped me stop a panic attack. So your system is uniquely yours. Yeah. Yes. So try as many things as you can. That's why I have 57 solutions here. If you follow me, you'll see I have all these anxiety hacks. I'm eventually I'll have a total of 100 of them on the page, slowly but surely.
Fantastic way to finish the interview would be, if I was in the middle of a panic attack now, what top three of your 57 tips would you say to me if you were there?
I'll start with how I got over one that was starting on an airplane.
Yeah.
First, you have to let yourself know that it's a panic attack. Mm-hmm.
What happens if your brain's telling you otherwise, though, which it often does when you're anxious?
Well, if you're having, you must know, you must have had, you've had other panic attacks, right? So you just assume, so you've got a good couple of hours at least if you're having a heart attack, you've probably got I have a post on how to tell the difference between a panic attack and a heart attack, although some people have had things that were outside the mainstream where it's lasted for a really, really long time. Most panic attacks last only 10 minutes. So you've got a tremendous window. So just start off with, give yourself the assumption that it's a panic attack. Just let yourself assume it's a panic attack until it's proven otherwise. If it lasts for more than an hour, you probably do need to see the doctor, even if it is a panic attack, because you just don't know. And I, you know, I mean, I'd love to be able to say people don't have that experience, but they do. I spent thousands of dollars on heart stuff from gummy vitamins that caused me chest pain. Right. And then another time from a flat white at Starbucks that I drank at 8 o'clock in the morning and didn't realize what it was. And then the nurse I called said, you need to get in. I finally went in and spent a couple $1,000 and it was indigestion. There's going to be stuff outside the curve. But on the airplane, what I did was I said, this is a panic attack. And what I tried to do was imagine a genie. If you've ever seen the TV show Genie, I dream of Genie, where she goes back in the bottle. What I tried to do is imagine the panic was smoke. And then I just imagined bringing it back into my head. And that's not a technique in my book. That's just a technique I'm sharing with you. I've never shared it with anyone. Okay. But that's what helps. So the eye thing is definitely something I would try. I would try to notice where I feel something in my body and do techniques that release that stuff. Maybe unzip your body and see if you can pull out something, see if something symbolic shows up. And then breathing techniques. So... I have something called double stop breathing, which you probably saw in the post the other yesterday or the day before, where you breathe in for four, you hold, you breathe in for four, you hold, and then you breathe out for eight.
Okay.
And so any breathing technique where your exhale is longer, at your holds and your exhale are longer than your inhale, then that starts your parasympathetic nervous system working, which is the rest and digest system, which is what happens when you recover. It's a recovery part of your body that after you're being chased by the woolly mammoth, and you happen to escape into a nearby cave and the woolly mammoth runs by, the recovery process is the way it comes from the parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And for everyone who wants to follow you and see all the amazing work that you do on Instagram, where's the best place they can follow you? And what was the website again?
Okay, so the website is anxiety123.com. Again, I made it as easy as 123. It's anxiety123.com. I've heard so many podcasts, even people that bought their stuff, where they'd give me the website on the air, not me, but on the air. I'm like, I don't remember that 5 minutes later, but this is as easy as 123, anxiety123.com.
Get that. To get it as a name, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and also you can follow me on my socials on that website. There's links to do that. Right. But I'm at Mahesh Groh, at MaheshGro. So you can find me that way.
Let me just see if there's any questions, because people put questions in just before you go, just to see if there's anything we missed off. How do you get things done when being anxious instead of avoiding it? Someone's asked.
Well, here's the thing. You have to have some techniques to lower your anxiety. Your goal is, if you're too anxious to do it and you stop doing it, your brain is going to say, I saved their life.
Yes.
Yay. This is great. Let's keep doing this. So you don't want to do that.
No.
So what you have to do is lower your anxiety. So some of the techniques I shared today, you can see the techniques on my page. I share a bunch of techniques. I recommend my book. People have spontaneously given me testimonials on my ads. It was kind of shocking to see somebody say such great things about this, how this works. Somebody who gets really crazy anxiety attacks and says, and doesn't like the breathing solutions, said, hey, every time I get one, there's something here I can work with. And if you practice ahead of time, find your techniques. Some of these techniques, I was a ghostwriter and I was writing books for other people, and I'd get to Starbucks, and one day it took me till 2 o'clock to get to Starbucks, and I felt this tension in my body. And I kind of had been trained at that point to, you let yourself feel it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was anxiety, but it was anxiety. It wasn't some kind of trauma. It was anxiety, but I didn't know that. So I stayed with it, and it took me 3 hours to actually get out of the car. And then I rode for half an hour, and then it came back. Mm-hmm. So stopping doesn't help. I mean, that was like an entire day's work. I mean, I got a whole page done in a half an hour, which was faster than I often write, but that's still not particularly good. And then one day, when I realized this stuff was anxiety, what I would do is I would notice the anxiousness and I would do a technique. I remember walking from Starbucks to the Chinese restaurant, and I was doing three techniques back and forth the whole time. And I was able, after a while, you're able to go back to the work or go back to whatever it is that you want to do. And if that doesn't work, then you should look for the core wound underneath it. I mean, you should probably, I'm a big believer that there's core wounds under this stuff.
And one final question, because it's trauma related, which obviously we've had a fantastic insight into everything that you do with trauma, which is great, because I don't think we highlight it enough on the platform. So I'm really excited that we've had this chat, because it's going to open up the eyes of people in the community who obviously really, really keen on knowing more about this stuff. So let's put, does trauma bonding and love addiction go hand in hand?
Well, probably. I mean, you can. There's other kinds of love addiction. Love addiction is not necessarily a trauma bond. It's love addiction. A trauma bond is somebody who treats you lousy, so and who treats you wonderfully, and then starts treating you lousy, and then starts treating you wonderfully, and then lousy, right. And you live for, you know, the wonder kind of thing. So it very easily can lead to a love addiction. So. Right. Yes. And so if you notice that you have a trauma bond, if you're aware of it and there's any way you can leave the relationship, then I would do that.
So would a trauma bond be more likely to be a manipulator and a narcissist?
Yes. So I'm not an expert in all the latest stuff. Frankly, I've learned a bunch of it from Instagram, so which doesn't, because I'm not a psychologist, I'm a hypnotherapist. Yeah. And my work, I find that my work works without having to have any knowledge, because the knowledge you need, you need to be able to go find the core wound that keeps you stuck in the trauma bond, and that will eventually free you as you heal kind of the past things. But what I would recommend, if you can, if the trauma bond is also a love addiction, which, you know, I suspect pretty much is across the board true, there's a group called Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. And if you want to get some support, and it's a 12-step program, but, you know, when you, if you want to leave someone who you're in a trauma bond with, it probably helps to have other people in your life. And they're everywhere. I mean, I don't know if they're, I'm sure there are places where they're not, but if you're in, you know, relatively largely populated areas, you'll probably find it.
Awesome. No, that's wonderful. That just leaves me to say, thank you very much for coming on and answering the questions. Really enjoyed it. Very insightful chat. We'll get this onto the platform, and also we'll get it converted over to a podcast, and we'll do some shout out. So yeah, thank you very much. Is there anything that you want to say that you've missed off, or do you think you've covered everything?
One last thing, I guess.
Yeah.
The number one thing, if I could do anything in the world, it would be to teach people what I teach in this emotional overload first aid kit, which is why I'm giving it away for free. Because if people could understand why they're triggered and heal that, instead of taking it out on other people and blowing up their life, other people's lives, their you know, their kids even, and their work. I mean, poor Will Smith, if he had this technique, he wouldn't have slapped Chris Rock at the Oscars. He would know, if you're that upset, there's something under the surface. And let's see if we can, you know, find that and deal with that. So I'm on a mission to get my free emotional overload first aid kit into every hand I can get it into.
The community loves a freebie. If they've just finished listening to this now, how do they go and get it? So onto your Instagram, it's in your link in bio.
Yes, and also anxiety123.com.
Right, fantastic. Well, that's wonderful. Again, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate the insight, and just continue to do the amazing work you're doing. And yeah, again, thank you from the community.
Well, you too. You're doing amazing work too. So.
All right, look after yourself.
You too.
Take care.
Take care.